looking at the unveiling of God's glory through the coming of the Word. And verse 14 is a key verse in this passage. We didn't really get that far this morning, but verse 14 is really key to that unveiling, and it says, "And the Word was made flesh and dwelt among us, and we beheld." There's the unveiling, "and we beheld." And this morning, very quickly, we looked at the wealth of the Word in verses 1 to 5. Somebody tell me what was involved in that wealth of the Word, if you were taking notes this morning. He is unique, right, in his person. How is he unique? He's God. He's unique in his eternality. He's unique in his equality, and he's unique in his essentiality of, essentially, he is God. He is wealth to us because he is of his universal power. Verse 3, he's the creator. All things were made by him, and without him was not anything made that was made. And he is unparalleled in his provision. What does he give to us? Life and light. So that was all in the first part of that. And then the witness. Who is the witness of the Word? John was. He came for a witness. And we looked at the characteristics of a proper witness. And that proper witness recognized their limitations. That proper witness had divine calling. That proper witness had understood God's grace in allowing us as individuals to serve God. That witness certainly had a primary obligation, and that was to be a witness. And with a goal in mind, and that goal was there verse 7, that all men through him might believe. That was the goal for them to believe. And the characterization that was needed was humility. And verse 8 and 9 says he was not that light. And so the humility of not thinking you're more than you are, but he must increase and I must decrease. Now that brought us to point number 3 in our message. And that was verses 10 through 13. And we have the welcome of the Word. I know that many, if not all of you, had opportunity to go yesterday over to the Nightingales. And certainly we all appreciate their ministry to us in this way. And I'm going to let out a little secret. My wife, you know, earlier in the day said, "I don't want any lunch because we're going to Nightingales, you know, because she knew that there would be lots of good food, you know." So she said, "I want to be hungry when I go to the Nightingales, you know." I'm not trying to embarrass her, but I probably have already. I probably went a little that way too, you know. We always feel a welcome when we go to the Nightingales, don't we? When we get there, we just know that we're all welcome. And it's a wonderful, blessed ministry that they have in this way to not only us, but many of their friends and relatives as well. But isn't it terrible when you feel unwelcome? That's how Christ felt when he came to this world. And a lot of people did not welcome him because they were ignorant of who he was. Verse 10 says, he was in the world, the world was made by him, but the world knew him not. They should have recognized that he was the creator. They should have understood that he was the creator, but they didn't. And through ignorance, the tragedy was that the creator was unrecognized. And then later in verse 10, even when he might have been recognized, he was unreceived. In verse 11, it says, he came into his own, and his own received him not. And that's a real tragedy today, isn't it? That there are some who are just ignorant of who he is. And that's why we have the responsibility to share the truth of who he is. But there are many who understand who he is, but just refuse to receive him. And there's a little bit of a witnessing technique that you may want to use sometime. I have oftentimes sat down and tried to have a conversation with someone, and I've used this a little bit with them. I've said, what are your plans? I'll use Lindsay as an example tonight. So she's just finished with a major thing in her life, college graduation. And then I'll say, and then what? And so she'll say, well, then I hope to get a job as a fifth grade teacher somewhere. And then what? Well, I want to teach kids. And then what? Well, I hope to meet some guy sometime and get married, you know. And then what? And well, I hope to raise a family. And then what? You know, you can always go with a and then what until you get them to, well, I'm going to die. And then what? You know, and then what? And I have used that several times to just try to get people to think about, yes, once we try to make these plans and we try to have goals and so forth, but we're eventually going to come to a point where we're going to have to enter into eternity. And then what? And then what? And we have folks who may agree with you, oh yeah, Jesus Christ is the Savior and he came. But they still, even if having mentally acknowledged that, they've taken no action personally upon that truth. And they have not welcomed him into their heart and life. And certainly, if we have understood who he is, and we have welcomed him, and verse 12 says, as many as received him, so we have welcomed him, we have received him. But isn't it sad that some who have received him still live like he's not welcome in their life? They have received him initially, but then they try to go ahead and live their life as if they haven't welcomed the Savior into their life. You know, having welcomed him into our life ought to make a difference. Having welcomed him into our hearts and lives should cause us to want to live and please him, and not to just do our own thing all the time, and not to just go our own way and make our own plans. You remember in James when we have the warnings against those who are merchants and they're making plans and they're going to go into this city and they're going to stay a while and they're going to buy and sell and get gain. How does James respond to that? He said you ought to say, if the Lord will, we are going to go here and do this. And you know, a lot of times we make our plans, but we live as if there isn't a Savior that we have welcomed into our life. And we need to always be accounting for that. And so we see, I'm not getting any changing here tonight. Could you change the slide for me, David? There. The welcome of the word, and we have this tragic failure to welcome him, and that's in verses 10 and 11, and sometimes it's because of ignorance, and sometimes it's because of, but then we also have in verse 10, we see a triumphant fruit of welcoming him, and so that is letter B there, triumphant fruit of welcoming him. And what is the triumphant fruit? It says there in verse 10, we become the sons of God. That's the fruit. We become the sons of God. And so we have a new relationship. We have believed. And we have a new right. We now have the power. That's what the word power means. The right or the authority to become the sons of God. And we have a new regeneration, which were born. which we're born. We have been regenerated. And there's both a negative and a positive aspect to that being born. Negatively, it's not of what? It's not of blood. And it's not of the what? Flesh, the will of flesh, nor of the will of man. And so we see that it's not just something we get from our parents through our blood. It's not something that is accordance to what we do, the will of the flesh, nor some have said, as I was reading, that this has nothing to do with someone else declaring it so, the will of man. But who is the one who is giving us all these triumphant fruit? It's God. God. Salvation is of him, start to finish. And that brings us to our fourth and last point tonight, and I'm not sure if we can get there or not. It must be frozen up a little bit, David. No, not with my. It went to sleep. There, we have the triumphant fruit, and then let's see if we can go on to the next. A new relationship, a new right, and a new regeneration. And then let's see if we can get to the next. There, the wonder of the word. That's. We'll just stop there, and I won't bring up the rest of the slides. But the wonder of the word. Let's read it in John 1:14-18. And the Word was made flesh and dwelt among us, and we beheld his glory, the glory as of the only begotten of the Father, full of grace and truth. John bare witness of him and cried, saying, This was he of whom I spake. He that cometh after me is preferred before me, for he was before me. And of his fullness all we received, and grace for grace. For the law was given by Moses, but grace and truth came by Jesus Christ. No man hath seen God at any time. The only begotten Son, which is in the bosom of the Father, he hath declared him. So we have verse 14 reminding us of the fact that he's given us and shown us God's glory, and he's declared the Father in verse 18. Two main points here that I want to bring to your attention tonight is that in his humility, he identifies with us. And what was his humility? He became man. And so because he became man, he identified with us. He was made flesh. So he adopted humanity as his own. And he embraced our company. He dwelt among us. That's a word that means to tabernacle among us, to tent among us. And in his human flesh, he tented or tabernacled with us. And if he is tabernacling with us, that means that this was a sacred place. This was a sacrificial place. But he welcomed our scrutiny. What phrase in this passage shows us that he welcomed our scrutiny? We find the phrase, and we beheld. That means we can look him over. We can see. Do you remember when Jesus was ministering here on earth and there was a group of people who came to the disciples, and what was their request? They said, we would see Jesus. We would see Jesus. And you know what? Jesus invites our scrutiny tonight. He says, see. At the tomb, when it was empty, what did the angel say to the women? Come and see. You know, and Christianity and Christ can withstand all kinds of scrutiny. There are those who started out studying scriptures and studying all of these events with the idea of disproving them. And after they'd studied, guess what happened in their own lives? They found out it was true. They studied and the truth reached into their hearts And they may have had a wrong motive for studying, but God did a wonderful thing as they scrutinized God's goodness, His truth, His genuineness, His glory, His greatness. So you can look at Christ and you can see His grace or His goodness, His truth, His genuineness, and His glory, God's greatness. He reveals them all to us. And so we are so thankful tonight that Christ welcomes our scrutiny and reveals to us God's goodness, God's genuineness, and God's greatness. But also in verses 15 and following, in His nobility He endows us. Now, what is an endowment? If you receive an endowment, what is that? We usually think of something financial, don't we? But it's someone who has given us something with their blessing. They have given it to us. And so in His humanity, He identifies with us, but in His nobility, He endows us. What does He endow us with? Well, in verse 15, He eclipses us, says, "He that cometh after me is preferred before me." You know, he eclipses our humanity. Even though Jesus Christ became flesh, He still eclipses us because He also is the Son of God. And He enriches our lives. How does He enrich us? By His fullness, we're made whole. That verse talks about His fullness we have received. So He enriches us with His fullness. And He enriches us by making us whole. He enriches us by making us strong through His grace. And He enriches us by making us free with His truth. His truth shall make us free. And then He also enlightens our minds. Verse 18. No man hath seen God at any time. The only begotten Son, which is in the bosom of the Father, He hath declared Him. And certainly tonight we can see that He is not just man. And we can see that He is the only begotten Son of God. And we can see that He is in the bosom of the Father. That talks again the same truth that is in verse 1 about being one with the Father. And there's that wonderful fellowship between God the Father and God the Son. And because of that, we too can know God. And so this passage is rich, rich, rich beyond compare. It tells us how worthy the Word is. It tells us how we can be a witness for the Word. It tells us how we can welcome the Word. And it fills us with wonder as we consider the Word that became flesh and dwelt among us. And all of this we consider here at Christmas time, when He certainly became flesh. I would have us turn now to a song, "The Power of the Cross." And we're going to sing that before we proceed into the Lord's table. And so I'll just give you